Chapter 1. My country, right or wrong, this is my land, my home. I yearn not for that strange, unfamiliar place called Europe. I am an African, a white African. Chas Lauter. Rebellion. In the lives of most nations, there comes a moment when a stand has to be made for principles, whatever the consequences. This moment has come to Rhodesia. I call upon all of you in this historic hour to support me and my government in the struggle in which we are engaged. I believe that we are a courageous people, and history has cast us in a heroic role. To us has been given the privilege of being the first Western nation in the last 2 decades to have the determination and fortitude to say, so far and no further. We may be a small country, but we are a determined people who have been called upon to play a role of worldwide significance. We Rhodesians have rejected appeasement and surrender. We have struck a blow for the preservation of justice, civilization, and Christianity, and in the spirit of this, we have thus assumed our sovereign independence. God bless you all. Rhodesian Prime Minister Ian Douglas Smith, unilaterally declaring independence from Britain. With the British government, led by Harold Wilson, insisting on no independence before majority rule, Nibmar, Rhodesian Prime Minister Ian Smith, decided the black rule that would soon follow spelled doom for his country, and decided it was time to go it alone. On November 11, 1965, surrounded by his cabinet, he reached for his pen and signed a document that signaled open rebellion against the crown. Not since the American Declaration of Independence was promulgated in 1776 has such an event taken place. It was a unilateral declaration of independence, UDI, and the die was cast. The country would soon be at war with the world. At midday, Rhodesians sat riveted to their radios as Smith told them of his momentous decision. Darrell Watt. One young man listening to that fateful broadcast was Darrell Watt. I was at school when we heard the news. There was uncertainty about what it all meant. I was quite frightened. I spoke to my dad, who was pro-Smith, so I took my cue from him. I was reminded that many of my forebears were soldiers, so if there was going to be a fight, I was up for it. My dad was born in Bulawayo in 1921 and went to Milton Boys High, where he was head boy. At 18, he was called up for service in the Second World War, and after training in Salisbury, he was railed to Cape Town, where he, along with his Rhodesian contingent, was shipped to Liverpool and on to Catterick in Yorkshire. In 1941, he was deployed to Algiers as part of the 78th British Infantry Division. He did not like it there because of the lack of hygiene. From there, he went to Tunisia and took part in the battles against Rommel's Africa Corps. From there, he was evacuated to Italy and trekked to Reggio and Taranto via Sicily. The advance north through Italy was a tough one, and he told me of his high regard for the German soldiers. The weapon they appear to have most feared was the German 88mm, with its high velocity and low trajectory. The battle at Monte Cassino left the biggest impression on him, and he never quite got over the terrible loss of life he witnessed there. Wounded by shrapnel and sick with yellow fever, he was hospitalized in Bari, on the coast, before continuing the march into Austria. His final battles were in the Po Valley, west of Naples. He also spoke highly of the civilized way in which the German soldiers conducted themselves. His lasting impression at the end of the war was Britain's ingratitude. He was told to find his own way home. My grandmother nursed in both world wars,